8:12 now. Good morning. Joined in the studio now by the executive director of Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with the good news that, and this was through Utah Open Lands, but I know you are a big partner in this, saving the Armstrong Snow Ranch pastures and the Red Barn.
That's right. I think we're a small partner in that, but the Summit Land Conservancy was happy to be able to help in a couple of ways. We were able to offer a matching grant so we could double some people's money late in the game, and also just being able to reach out to our members and supporters who, you know, we know are supportive of land conservation here in Park City. So huge kudos to Utah Open Lands and Wendy Fisher. That was a big lift, a scary cliffhanger there at the last minute. A huge thank you to the Armstrong families and also the city council who agreed to come in and bring the finish line a little bit closer. So, yeah, that's a terrific piece of conservation.
Yeah, so both this and the one that you worked on, the Oscar Thorpe Family Ranch, they are conservation easements.
Correct.
We don't own the property. It
that's
still
right.
remains in the ownership of both the Armstrong and Oscar Thorpe families.
That's right. That's right. You know, conservation easements just like this are used across the country because they are the most efficient way, most cost-effective way of saving the open spaces in our communities. So, for example, over in Wasatch County, both the Midway Open Space Committee and Wasatch Open Space are desiring to use conservation easements. So they don't want to actually own land. If you own land, then you have to take care of the weeds, and you have to take care of the maintenance, and you have to take care of the fences, and it's expensive. If you can save the land, basically you keep it as it is today, and it's just more cost effective to buy just the development rights off of the property. And in both of these cases, both the Osgathorpes and the Armstrongs have made significant multi-million dollar gifts in order to make these conservation transactions possible.
So what do you mean? I mean, they didn't pay anything. They just lowered the...
They reduced the purchase price, but basically they're giving up equity that has been built in the property over generations. So if they put a for sale sign up, they would get cash for that equity. In these transactions, they're making that equity as a donation. So they are walking away from very real dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's why the federal government allows them to take a tax write-off.
Okay. Even though, I mean, if they sold it, they would also, they would pay a lot of taxes on that. Too.
They would, you know, in most of these situations with conservation easements, the landowners never really are able to recoup the value of the donation that they get, just because the donations are so large. They can offset the capital gains by the donation a little bit, but, you know, in the case of the Armstrongs, you know, that's a $10 million gift. You gotta have a lot of income to offset.
Yeah. These are both relatively flat parcels. They would have made really good development parcels. I mean, we hear about the need for affordable housing. I mean, this is where you would look for as opposed to building on the mountainside.
You know, Leslie, that's such a good point because it's brought up frequently. And I think really what we need to look at is the bigger picture of how we use land. It's really important that people have access to green spaces. Children, adults, all of us are more healthy if there are green spaces near our homes and where we live. So how can we, you know, save green spaces and still have a vibrant community where people can actually live? I think we should look at redeveloping some properties. I think we should look at perhaps a little more density on some properties because that would allow us to accommodate both our need, our real fundamental human need for green open spaces, as well as making this community a place that is actually vibrant and livable.
Okay. Is this it for public open space asks? I mean, I think everyone's so weary.
You know, I think that we don't have another big conservation project at the moment. You know, we were asked similar questions after Bonanza Flat. You know, is this it? Well, you know, when we were doing Bonanza Flat, I think both Wendy and I knew that we were in discussions with the Armstrongs and the Osgathorpes. So we knew we weren't done. I don't think we're done. I think there are a couple of other very important parcels that some of which people think are saved, but maybe are not saved. And also, I think as Summit County grows, as the population here grows, more and more of us are going out to Eastern Summit County, fishing, using trails, recreating out there. There's a lot of conservation opportunities out there. But, you know, for right now in Park City, I think it's time to look a little bit at stewardship, at how the ecosystems are functioning here. Can we enhance some of these properties to sequester a little more carbon, which is happening out on the McPolin farmlands, you know, with us and mostly Bill White Farms and the city doing a lot of work out there. So,
all right. Again, these are conservation easements. Does that allow public easement?
It depends. You know, there is nothing in our Osgathorpe easement that prohibits public use. So if there was some way to work that out, there's certainly, you know, the family was willing to do it before. So and the Armstrong piece, I believe, also has an option for public access.
Okay, because I'm going to say, I mean, it's still private property, right?
It's still private property. But again, you know, people benefit. We benefit from protected open space sometimes in many ways in addition to or other than recreational use. So you don't necessarily have to have your own feet on somebody's property to benefit from a local farm, from the carbon sequestration that happens there, from the wildlife that enjoys that property. There are just a lot of other conservation values that benefit the public in addition to or besides actual recreation.
All right. So in addition, you are close to closing a couple of more NRCS-funded conservation easement. NRCS is
Natural Resource Conservation Service. That is a federal government, branch of the federal government. It's funded through the Farm Bill. Each state is given money for farm and ranch land conservation. And about in 2012, I realized that Utah was sending the money back to Washington, D.C., so it was used for conservation, I suppose, in Colorado and California, which is great. But I thought, shoot, we should use that here. So, yes, we have two more federal Farm Bill funded easement projects. One is up Chalk Creek outside of Colville. It's about 800 acres. And the other is in Hennifer, which is 90 acres. So in Hennifer, we've done already three other easement projects. So this brings there's a whole swath now of property that will be protected, and it's over 200 acres in the Hennifer area.
Okay. Let's see. Coming up later this month, you've got a moonshine adventure with Mountain Trails Foundation. So what's this?
That's right. So we like to take people out to play in the dark, get a different view on the open spaces. We partner with Mountain Trails because we have three different types of activities. So they meet at 8 o'clock at night at the Quinns Junction Trailhead, and you have the opportunity to do a trail run, a trail hike, or a bike ride. And we do encourage people to, you know, bring your hydration and your headlamps. And we basically, you know, it's our staff and Mountain Trails staff and volunteers, and we go out and look at things under a different light.
So this is going to be in Round Valley?
In Round Valley, yeah.
It's on Tuesday, July 16th, again at 8 p.m. Is that a full moon?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that helps.
Yes, that's the idea, full moon.
All right, and boy, we had seen just a number of big, I guess they're called hares, not rabbits. They're bigger than rabbits out in the Round Valley area, so beware of those.
Very dangerous bunnies.
Speaking of Mountain Trails Foundation, what's the latest plans to build this kind of joint offices, headquarters for both Mountain Trails Foundation and Summit Land Conservancy?
Well, we're still very much in the discovery phase of this, looking at what might be possible, looking at what it would cost us. But what both organizations have realized is that if we continue to try to rent in this community, we will be putting millions of dollars into the pockets of a landlord somewhere. And we thought, you know, we could, as all of us who buy homes do, we buy homes and you pay it off, and after 20 or 30 years, then you own it and you have, you know, some security there. And we realized that, you know, we could put more money back into our missions if we were able to find a place that we could buy. And, you know, I mean, yes, of course, for the next 20 years, we still pay, but we'd be paying anyway because we'd be paying rent. And then after 20 years, that funding could go back to open space and trails.
Yeah. The problem, though, is that every nonprofit could make the same argument.
Well, I don't know why that's a problem. All of us buy houses as well. So, you know, I think what organizations can do, and many have, right? I mean, and KPCW is no exception, to say, well, what do we need and how can we get it? And you come and you make a proposal, whether that's to the city or a landlord somewhere else. You know, you have to get your board engaged and to sit down and say, hey, you know, how can we make this work? We think that partnering with Mountain Trails is a good opportunity for both organizations because it gives us both a partner. And it's good to have a partner in life.
Yeah. So what's the process from here on out? I know you were before the city council, but I don't. It just was kind of a proposal at that point.
We went to the city council because there is a piece of property out at Quinn's Junction that is restricted. There's a deed restriction on it. And it's not a deed. The deed restriction says you can still build things there. But they're specific what you can build, and it has to reference, you know, protecting the open space or protecting the recreational uses that are out there. So we felt that our two organizations fit the terms of the deed restriction, whereas some other organizations might not. So we're not taking an opportunity away from another nonprofit. And also, it is close to the work that we do, so it makes sense to be out in that location. You know, we are still in the discovery process. As I said, we're looking at the cost. We're looking at are there other things that we can do to bring community benefit to this building? And so we expect to have another proposal back to the city council probably by the end of this month.
Okay. Let's see. Coming up later this month, you've got a couple of hops hikes again, just checking out where the hops are growing and how they're doing.
That's right. Watching them. And I think it'll be really interesting this year compared to last year when, you know, the hops that we harvested last summer at the end of the year were very dry, very small. And this year they've had so much moisture. I hope that they will be large and lush. And so we do have a hike this Sunday. So the hops hikes happen every other Sunday. This Sunday, July 7th. At 9:30 in the morning, they will meet at the parking lot, or it's just a gravel lot off of Marsac Drive up here, you know, kind of just up the hill from the Marsac building and on the opposite side of the street, and they'll go hike what we call Virginia Mine Claims. So that's this Sunday, and then also on Sunday the 21st, and people can sign up on our website, and we ask that they do because they have to sign a waiver. So visit wesaveland.org.
Okay. Finally, you've got tickets still remaining to the Blue Sky Bash happening next month.
Tickets are still remaining, but boy, they're going fast. So yes, visit again, wesaveland.org, and there's a happenings tab. You can click there for all of these fun things to get out and play. And again, happy birthday to KPCW. It would be a lot harder for the Summit Land Conservancy and most nonprofits to do the good work that we do without your help. So happy birthday.
Okay. Cheryl, thanks. Cheryl Fox is the Executive Director of the Summit Land Conservancy. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:25. It's 8:34. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the 84th annual Oakley Rodeo kicking off tomorrow night, running through Saturday. On the phone with details, I have the mayor of Oakley, Wade Wolstenholme. Good morning to you, Wade. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Hey, so before we get to the details of the rodeo itself, just remind us, if you would, a bit about the history of the Oakley Rodeo. My math shows that it started back in 1935, and I think it was started by members of your family.
Yeah, it started out by, they put up a snow fence and parked cars around in a pasture down here in Oakley, and they would ride steers and bucking horses and celebrate the 4th of July that way.
Right. So this was long before we had the professional rodeos. It was just, what, family and friends?
The professional rodeo, it was an amateur rodeo through what they called the Rocky Mountain Rodeo Association for probably 30 or 40 years. And then in 85, I believe, was the first year that we had the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association involved with our rodeo.
Yeah, and that's when you really started to see a lot of growth with the rodeo, and you built new rodeo grounds to help deal with that growth. So when did those new grounds get built up?
I believe this is like our 15th year in the new rodeo ground.
Okay. So
and it just got to where we didn't have enough space when all the cowboys would come to town. The center street road that goes up by the old park, there's horse trailers parked 3 and 4 deep all the way along that road. Just know where you can drive through there. And it's usually just one night it was packed like that, but they would come in, we'd rodeo, and we just got thinking that we need more space for people to park, more space for buildings and things. And so we had an opportunity to purchase the land that we're now sitting on, and we've been paying on that, and for till 2022 we will have that paid off, and everything will be paid for on our facility just from the celebration and what it brings to the community.
Yeah, then just in time to start making some probably necessary improvements, huh?
Yeah, we're already having to make improvements. I think if you don't improve every year, things get depleted and dangerous. And so every year we're making some improvements, and it's growing more and more every year.
Yeah. So the rodeo happens again 5 nights starting Wednesday through Saturday, every night at 8 p.m. It said limited, and I clicked on one of those nights, Saturday I think it was, and I saw one seat. So do you have some seats available?
Right now, what we pick up, if you check in at the office, every once in a while, somebody that bought a lot of tickets earlier on that's not using them, they'll bring them in, and you can pick up some tickets here and there. But right now, we're officially all sold out for all 4 nights. Now, tonight, we actually have what we call slack, and what that is the Cowboys contestants that could not fit into the performances on Wednesday through Saturday, they all come to compete, which adds to the prize money in the competition. And so there's going to be close to 250 runs of barrel racing, tie down roping, steer wrestling, and team roping tonight starting at 5 o'clock. And it's free. So anybody that wanted to come over and watch some good competition, I mean, a lot of world champions will be here tonight. All the timed events is what we call it. So that's your barrel racing, your tie down roping, your steer wrestling, and your team roping. That'll all be at 5 o'clock tonight. So, and it's free. So right. Anybody that wants to come and watch that can come.
So if somebody was hoping then for a physical ticket for Wednesday through Saturday, would they have to show up in person at the office, or how does that work?
If they call in, the office hours, I believe, are 8 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. If you call during those hours, you can speak to them online. They can put them on will call, take money through a credit card. Or it is a good chance. If you want to take a chance, and there's always people that have extra tickets outside the ticket office that are trying to sell them for the seller's prize. They're not scalping them or anything. But you can a lot of times find tickets just right before the rodeo also. But you are taking a chance.
Yeah. So do you know the phone number off the top of your head?
Yeah, it's 435-783-5734.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I mentioned 5 nights. Do we have the same riders riding all 5 nights?
No. And it's 4 performances, so it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Oh, right. I just count wrong.
So it's 4 performances plus the slack, which is the night, which I spoke about. There's different contestants coming in each night.
Okay, because that's pretty brutal, right, to do that day in, day out like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of the guys that are coming, 4th of July weekend is called the Cowboy Christmas because there's so many rodeos and so much money to be made to help get them qualified for the National Finals Rodeo in Las Vegas in December. And so a lot of these cowboys are competing sometimes 2 or 3 times a day, actually. So their bodies are getting very beat up during this week, which started actually last weekend, and it'll go through this weekend with all your 4th of July rodeos. So a lot of these guys will go to 12, 13 rodeos in that week period.
Wow. Okay, let's see. Anything new at the rodeo this year? It's pretty standard fare with the 8 o'clock start.
I think they got the specialty act this year is some Roman riding. some girls that ride Roman, which means they stand on the backs of the horses. There'll be one girl on the back of two horses standing and riding around. They jump through flames and things like that. So that's some entertainment that's going to be mixed in with the rodeo event. We have the special needs rodeo, which I believe is Wednesday at 4 o'clock. So if you know of any kids that have special needs, they take anybody that wants to come to that, and they have a great night for them and food also. That's one of the things we've added the last few years. And I don't know, it's just a good environment and a good family environment, and people have a lot of fun.
Yeah. And again, you will be shooting off fireworks after each of the shows, and yes, we're good to go there?
Yep. Each night we will have fireworks.
Okay.
Thank the good Lord for all the moisture we've had this year, so we have no restrictions at this point. I guess if a big windstorm come up or something like that, we would have to think about it. But for now, we're planning on fireworks every night.
Okay. What else is going on in Oakley? Of course, I know the rodeo is a big deal for you, but in terms of any other projects that the town's working on?
We've been doing some extensive work on our water system and sewer systems the last couple of years, and we're getting on top of that. We're excited about some improvements that we've done to our water system, and I think our employees that have worked really hard to get that done, and the contractors that have come in and helped us. And so we're excited about that, because really when it comes down to water and sewer is probably your most important infrastructures that you have in your city.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that what you're doing? What, new water lines or just kind of a treatment?
Actually, we've been working on our wells and how, you know, the production of our humbug well. And we've cleaned that whole well out and cleaned all our tanks and sealed them, and to just keep us from getting any bacteria or anything, and then keep it at a high production so that we can keep up with the needs of the city.
Yeah. And I know when we talked a year ago, the transit taxes had kind of just been placed, well, now more than a year ago. But have you seen any, has Oakley seen any improvements with that money?
Yeah, we've been able to work on some roads and things. We haven't got a lot of money, but we have probably doubled what we could have repaired with our current tax dollars, as far as overlaying the roads and filling potholes and things like that. So, you know, there we do have needs. And oh, and another thing that we've been working on is right on the complex down in the river bottoms, we've been working on it. We got a grant to do a campground. And so what our thoughts are with the campground is we got a place now that we can lease out for families that, you know, have a big family that want to come in and do a family reunion for the weekend and things like that. That's going to be up and running this fall. We're getting close to completion on it. So, yeah, and we've had an addition of bike trails, mountain bike trails up by our water tanks on the east side of Oakley. You go up there in United Week, and there's 20 or 30 mountain bikers up there on those trails. Added some good horse trails and walking trails. They seem to be a big hit. Give people something to do, to go out and exercise.
Well, and I know
Lord knows we need more exercise.
Yeah, I know with that Stevens Grove parcel that the city acquired after it was purchased by Summit Land Conservancy. Lots of people using those trails out there as well.
Yeah, that's one of the few that we have. We have that one, and we have another one that with some Eagle Scout projects has been improved down at the end of France and Acres in Oakley, and a couple of trails that go down around through the river bottoms there. And then the trails that they've been improving up by the water tank. That's where the mountain bike trails are.
Yeah.
So Summit Trails, and a lot of people have donated and put time in to make these things possible for people. And as far as I can see, they're all getting used.
Great. All right. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Yeah, just remember on the 4th of July, we have a parade at 10. At 11 o'clock, we have a great patriotic program. If you've never been to that, it's really, really good. It's put on by just citizens of the community and surrounding areas. A lot of music, and it's really good. And then at noon, we have a barbecue that you can eat. We have roast beef, and just it's a real good barbecue that you can eat right there. And that's all at the Red Barn following the parade. And then at 1 o'clock, we have a junior rodeo. So kids can get caught, can come and chase chickens and do relays and ride sheep and calves. So
okay.
It's a fun time for the kids. So the day of the 4th, there's something for everybody to do pretty much throughout the day.
Okay. Hey, Mayor Wade Wolstenholme, thanks for your time this morning.
You betcha. Thank you for having me on. We'll talk to you later.
Today marks the 39th anniversary of the sign-on of KPCW. It was July 2nd, 1980, when with the ceremonious cut of a wire by then-Mayor Jack Green, Park City Community Wireless was born. One of those instrumental in getting the station on the air was one of the original board of directors, I believe, Jay Meehan. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Happy birthday to you and the, the staff and the volunteers at KPCW. So,
well, thanks, Jay. Tell us, how were you involved first with the station? I know you and Blair and a handful of others kind of went through all of the paperwork to actually get the license and equipment up on the Memorial Building, which is now, I don't even know what we call it anymore, on Main Street.
No, I don't either. Well, Blair Fulner, he was the one who got the station on the air. It was his vision that did. And Dan Wilcox and Tom Bach and Becky Weidenhouse, Blair's wife at the time, were also on that original board of directors. And we all worked at KMOR together, down at Salt Lake, KMOR. And Blair went on this rock and roll DJ road trip with his motorcycle, and when he got back, he had this concept of community radio, and he sold us on it. And we just jumped on board, and then soon the entire community did. But that's how the original board of directors came to be.
Yeah, so the mission, though, was, and I remember Blair telling the story just about how we couldn't get local weather for Park City, and that was like one of the generating things. But Blair, of course, had a real knack for news, and that's what he wanted to do, bring local information and news to the Park City community.
Yeah, he did, and I thought that when he was handling the news, it was, and that's continued. That's always been my favorite part of the programming at KPCW. It's been the news and information. But as far as the rest of the programming, he and I kind of had a radio falling out, and that is because I was more into the hippie radio from my experience in L.A. before I came to Park City, and it was freeform, and it was just it never followed that track, and it more followed his track. But my main thing was I just wanted the station to survive, and 39 years, I'd say it has survived well.
Yeah. So what was it that you did? I mean, were you one of the DJs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All of us were. We all did everything. That's all there were, was Blair and Becky and Tom Bach and Dan Wilcox and myself. And so we did everything. Once we had signed on the air, we had some volunteers at the station. You know, once that happened, there were a few volunteers.
Yeah, and we had some pretty incredible programming back in the day. I remember the Tooth Report had a local dentist basically sponsor a dental hygiene program. Do you recall that?
I don't recall it. No, I don't.
Dane Robinson, I remember
but it was very interesting programming. That I do recall.
And then Sid Reed was also did her kind of one-minute T.T. Tilley report at the noon hour?
She was part of this wave, second wave on the Board of Trustees that I think really turned the station around. Sid and so many other people that came on board at that time was, and then, of course, her radio show, that brief Tilley radio show she did every day.
Yeah. And I recall you telling me a story about how KPCW used to report the sports scores. Can you recall that?
Well, we did live rugby games from the top of the Mucker bus down in City Park. And then maybe the story you're thinking of is Putt-Putt, Wayne Putman, who's one of our dear mascots at the station, just of course for the whole town he was. He used to, when he first went on the air, he'd read the scores without mentioning the teams, and that got a lot of laughs. I remember that.
Yeah.
But it was kind of free form. People that had never done it before were doing it, and we were glad to have them doing it, whatever they did, you know.
Yeah. Any other funny or anecdotal stories that you got for us?
Well, let me see. We when we elected the board of directors, we were at Sneakers, and we just kept buying rounds, and we elected Blair president because that was an obvious, and then Tom Bach vice president, and excuse me, and I was elected secretary. I kept the minutes of the meetings, and Dan Wilcox was the treasurer, so we had him by the first round, the celebratory first round. Dan Wilcox became, he's passed away a while back, he became one of the strengths of that station, for sure.
Yeah, morning voice for many, many years. And we should also note Sneakers back in the upstairs. It was the private club, well, what was known at the time, Park City Racquet Club. So back then, though, I mean, did you really expect the station to last all these years?
I would have never guessed it, no. I was very paranoid that we wouldn't be able to draw in enough funds to make it. And a lot of good people who knew how to fundraise, I was not one of them, came on board and changed the paradigm, and it became a cash cow.
Well, we appreciate your retrospective here, and again, the support that you put into the station in those early days, Jay. Thank you.
It was a lot of fun. You're very welcome, and thank you for all your years, Leslie.
It's Jay Meehan, one of the original board of directors for Community Wireless, KPCW. This is the station that Park City built, KPCW Park City. It's 857.